A city is stronger together. So let's hear from the business and community leaders that keep Milwaukee on the upswing. Presented by Horicon Bank, the natural choice for all your banking needs. Now here's the host that's always on the upswing, WTMJ's Jeff Sherman.
Now, to business, gentlemen.
Welcome to the upswing. I'm Jeff Sherman. A big thank you, as always, to our good partners, the good people at Horicon Bank. As we roll into 2026, a lot of our upcoming guests on the upswing are going to help us explore what the year ahead is going to look like for business and community right here in the great state of Wisconsin, especially with the 2026 gubernatorial election on the horizon. Just a reminder, August 11th is the primary. It's going to narrow the field ahead of the November 3rd general election. November 3rd seems like so far away, but it's going to be here sooner than we know. We're going to flip the script a little bit and ask many of our guests to think like political consultants. If they had a few minutes with each candidate before the election, what would you tell them matters most to your business and your community? What should be on the economic to-do lists heading into 2026? What business and community leaders need the candidates to put on their agendas right now? Is it economic growth? Is it smart development? What about the future of sports betting? There's a lot of things on the table right now that could reshape Wisconsin's entertainment and corporate landscapes. Because really, it comes down to partnership. And that's why you're looking at government, you're looking at business, and you're looking at community to work better together. They already collaborate on so many different levels, but this election season gives us a real opportunity to make the needs and priorities super clear on what we want and why we need it now to push the state of Wisconsin forward in a unified way. So it's something we'll look forward to as our amazing guests sit across us and we look into their eyes and say, all right, put your political consultant hat on. This is your opportunity. To begin, we're going to talk with Beth Ridley. We're going to talk about the managers in the middle in every organization. A lot of them really technically strong. They know the business in and out, but often a little under-equipped for feedback and tough conversations and everyday team dynamics. Beth is focusing on this in her 2026 work, among other things. She is the founder and CEO of the Ridley Consulting Group, Leadership and Workplace Culture, each and every day focused on inclusivity, human-centric visions, and thriving teams. Beth is amazing at what she does, and we'll have some great insights. And I really look forward to what her agenda for our politicians is going to be. We're going to dig into the 2026 trends in the workplace, HR things that you can't ignore, why fewer candidates are writing thank you notes, and what's the deal with that? Beth will have some great insights. Lots to talk about. And when we come back, we're going to go two up, two things in the business world that I'm seeing that you need to know about right now. One of them is happening in Chicago.
Now it's time for the
two, count 'em, two.
Two up on the upswing.
Welcome back to the upswing. I'm Jeff Sherman. Two up, two things in the business world that you need to know about right now. First up on my plate today, Culver's is hitting Michigan Avenue, and Barnes & Noble is opening up a new location on State Street in Chicago. Now, hold up, Jeff. You're saying, all right, you're talking about Chicago. This is Wisconsin. I know. But I love to see Wisconsin businesses expand. So here's the deal. A franchisee of Culver's, obviously the Butterburger, Cheese Curd, Frozen Custard franchise. His name is Baron Waller. Just signed a 15-year lease to occupy more than 5,000 square feet at 1212 South Michigan Avenue. It's just a mile from Soldier Field, where the Bears play, indeed. The restaurant is going to be Waller's 11th Culver's location. The really cool thing is it's going to be on the ground floor of a residential building called the Park Michigan Apartments. And it's going to feature a walk-up window because it's in a dense residential area. No drive-through, but a walk-up window to get your burgers. I think that's really cool and kind of innovative for Culver's. In other Chicago news, as you look at the Loop area, Barnes & Noble is opening a new store on State Street in a former Old Navy space near the Chicago Theater. The store is looking to take almost 30,000 square feet and will be a flagship-style location. Now, why am I mentioning Barnes & Noble? Well, the store and the company has already said publicly that it plans to open 60 new stores in 2026 across the United States. So why not Milwaukee? Why not downtown Milwaukee? The Deer District needs some daytime use and some daytime foot traffic. I'm just saying, Milwaukee could really use another downtown bookstore. I know I love the used bookstores that we have, but you go back if you're old school Milwaukee like I am. The downtown Borders on Wisconsin Avenue, that's now a Planet Fitness, that closed in 2011, many years ago. So we have this kind of bubbling reemergence of bookstores across the country. Let's bring another big one to downtown Milwaukee. Put it on your agenda. If you have capacity to make that happen, do so. Second up, a TIF for TOSA, from research to lifestyle. Wauwatosa is considering a major remake of its Milwaukee County Research Park with up to $34.2 million in tax incremental financing. It's going to shift the 9-to-5 office park into a more mixed-use development. We're talking housing, amenities, and better public spaces. If you've been to the County Research Park lately, you know it opened exactly like that. Corporate uses, entrepreneurial uses, medical uses. Now the city is weighing, which a lot of areas around the country are doing, to make it more lifestyle centric. About $25.8 million of the package would be pay-as-you-go support for private projects, talking new streets, new utilities, new storm sewers, new streetscaping. Plans call for narrowing the roads, more seating, more publicly shaded areas, more lawns, more green space, ponds, all that stuff. Yes, they're even looking at pickleball courts. Lifestyle centers have to be places that work for people, and that's what TOSA is thinking. All right, is it time to take the research park into a lifestyle center environment? Live, work, play. That's what we've been saying for years. TOSA is looking to embrace it. Next up, work. Workplace trends, indeed, with Beth Ridley from the Ridley Consulting Group. Welcome back to The Upswing. I'm Jeff Sherman. We are joined in studio by Beth Ridley. Beth, I appreciate you taking time out of your day to spend a little bit of it with us.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Of course. So we're going to dig into 2026 workplace trends. A lot of things that we can't ignore this year. And I'm looking forward in a couple segments from now talking about this whole, like, do you send thank you notes after a job interview? Because there's a lot of talk online now about what's right and what's wrong. So I really look forward to that. But just kind of, I want to level set at the beginning here. So you're meeting with a company for the first time, Beth. What do you and how do you describe what you provide to companies day to day?
Well, usually if a company is meeting with me, there's a reason. So usually like engagement is a little soft, okay, or, you know, they're seeing a little turnover or some burnout and their results aren't what they want it to be. And usually always the reason is they have really smart managers in these people leadership roles, technically very strong, but struggle on the human side, the people side of things. So I help organizations improve the people skills of their technical physically strong, really smart managers.
Okay. So you're kind of, so if you look at the middle of organizations, like the manager level, a lot of really technically strong people there for sure. Like, you got to know the business, you got to know the ins and outs, and you got to know how to make things work. You have to know how to sell. But sometimes there's a struggle a little bit on the communication side, maybe the interpersonal skills.
Yeah.
How do you work to remedy that? And is that like a concern now that you're hearing in corporations?
I mean, it's a big concern, right? Because, I mean, work is already hard. Burnout is already a thing. People are doing their absolute best. And if they're not feeling inspired and motivated to work through the hard times, that's when people sort of either disengage or check out, either emotionally or actually they end up leaving. So it's a huge concern. And I find that most people in leadership roles, especially that middle manager rank, I mean, they're really well-intentioned. They want to be good leaders, but they're sort of leading in the way that got them to where they are today, which is they were independent producers. They were smart at their job. Mm-hmm. They were good subject matter experts. And they have to flip the switch in their mind to being, my job as a leader is not to have all the answers, do all the work, be the smartest person in the room, but to create the environment for the people around me to want to work hard, to be motivated and inspired. So it, once I can flip that switch in actually what the job is of a leader, then the rest can follow.
So is that asking the right questions? Is there a different process to that? Like, how can we best learn? Because we're all leaders in one way, shape, or form. We may not all be managers, but we all want to get better.
Yeah. And to me, it's all about like behaviors that are rooted in the fundamentals of the human needs of what we all need to want to show up and be our best. So there's actually a lot of like neuroscience behind this. Mm-hmm. So I do a lot of research on things like positive psychology, compassion, resilience that either can sound super technical or a little too woo-woo. And my job is to like synthesize it and package it in a way that's relatable to busy professionals. Yeah. So I try not to do a lot of like workshops and stuff like that, but give people just simple behaviors that you can practice. And if you make something a practice in your day to day, it becomes more of the way that you show up. None of it is actually rocket science. Mm-hmm. But again, it's sort of thinking about, part of my job is, am I creating the environment for people to be resilient when times are tough, or be resilient when I have to really challenge people and push them outside of their comfort zone, or give them really challenging feedback. All that becomes more possible if people have a sense of trust, if they feel like they're valued for their contributions, if they feel an emotional connection to their job. So,
yeah. We were talking with Beth Ridley of Ridley Consulting Group. Beth, so leadership is always changing, right? And maybe we're in a little different new era of leadership in 2026.
Yeah.
What does new era leadership mean in your world? I mean, you said a funny word there. And spiritual and mentorship and all these things can seem like, wow, that's kind of soft and fuzzy.
Yeah.
But it really, really matters, doesn't it?
Really matters. And actually, even matters now more because of AI. Because let's face it, AI is going to do the analytical work for us. So the only thing that's really left that humans can do well is the thing that humans can do, which is that emotional connection. So I guess maybe what was considered woo-woo because it was competing with, you know, I got to be technically smart at work, is now becoming the only thing that humans actually have value, which is, you know, being that person that can be the emotional connector, the motivator. And I think it's needed now more than ever because work is so freaking hard. Life is so hard. We need that personal person to make the connection in a more emotional way. So, I mean, maybe what was once considered woo-woo is now becoming more the norm at work.
Emotional intelligence, difficult conversations are going to happen no matter where we work, and we have to be prepared for those.
Yep.
If a manager comes to you and says, you know, how can I – what's that capacity building element that I really have to focus on this year?
Mm-hmm.
What is it?
Well, to me, I guess out of all the things, if I would say focus on creating an environment where people are okay speaking up, so that would be the psychological safety. Because I like to tell managers, you don't know everything. You'll never know everything. You can't solve everybody's problems. But knowledge is power, and the more you know about what's holding people back, about their frustrations, about that, what they really think about you, what they really think about work, you're going to be in a better position to lead. And the only way you're going to know that is if you create the environment where people are okay speaking up and sharing when things aren't honky-dory, or even when they've got a better idea. So if people aren't speaking up, the same issues are happening, and you're really at a deficit because you're the only one who doesn't know.
Yeah. We're talking with Beth Ridley from the Ridley Consulting Group. Beth, when we come back, there's a lot of noise, and you mentioned it a little bit, a lot of noise, but a lot of wonderful things around AI, return to office, maybe some ongoing drama and conversations there, DEI backlash a little bit, and generational friction, I think, is kind of a real thing in the business world. It doesn't have to be, but I want to get your thoughts on how we break down a bunch of these walls in the workplace in 2026. You're listening to The Upswing. This is WTMJ. Welcome back to The Upswing. I'm Jeff Sherman, joined in studio by Beth Ridley from the Ridley Consulting Group, talking about workplace trends and more for 2026. Beth, there's always a ton of things on our corporate plates in the workplace. AI, return to office, and more. I want to know, like, when you're sitting with a leadership team, how do you get them to focus on what's important now? When they're hearing, all right, we need to deal with return to office, we need to deal with AI, or what about generational differences? How do you balance all that?
Yeah, I try to give them a sense of comfort that, yeah, when everything is crazy around us and there's just like so much, let's just revert back to the fundamentals that we can all lean, that create a sense of calm and consistency among the chaos. And again, people don't have a lot of time for like training or doing stuff outside of work. So I actually posed just one question, which is, think of someone in your life who made you feel like you mattered, who was curious about you and made you feel safe. Who was that person? What were those actual behaviors that you experienced and the impact that it had on you? And usually people have a story. I don't know. It could be a coach, a mom, an aunt, a coworker. And I said, well, then it's just that, right? That's it. And, you know, just channel some of those simple behaviors and weave them into the way that you show up for other people. Because most people just want to know that they're valued and appreciated. And then they'll sort of step up and do more. And then I always ask a question, if I were to pose that same question to your direct reports, who's the most important person, you know, who's someone in your life who made you feel like you mattered, how many of them would say you? And then a lot of times people are like, oh, I don't know if anybody would. So I could, there's room for improvement. There's always room for improvement.
Exactly. And you're planting that seed across many different lines in the organization, and we all have ways that we have to improve.
And we all know what good leadership feels like because there's always someone who kind of made us feel that way. Or we also know what the absence of not having that is. So I think if we just be like, okay, this doesn't have to be rocket science, and it doesn't change over the centuries and generations, but if we can sort of go back and just remember that is part of our job to be a leader, and it's not just driving for results, it's driving for results in a way that people want to drive for the results.
Yeah. As much as it doesn't change, the reality is there's differences in how people communicate generationally, right? Mm-hmm. A 20-year-old may communicate a little differently than a 68-year-old in an organization.
Yeah.
How do you tackle that with the leaders that you work with in terms of generational friction?
Yeah. You know what? Just conversation. Yeah. I think it's really about managing differences. And something about having a conversation across differences is safe for everybody because everyone's an age and everybody kind of feels like their generation's the best generation. And so I think you can have fun with the conversations like, okay, at the end of the day, we want to feel like our communication is respectful and it's timely. What does that mean for you? Like some people might be like, well, it's text. And other people would be like, no, only text me if it's an emergency. So I think it's going to be different for each team, different for each circumstance. But some of those things like small little conversations and then agreeing on some new norms for the team based on who your team is and the work that you do can really go a long, long, long way. Yeah. And everybody feels that they're sort of part of contributing a little bit and a give and take to make a better culture for everybody.
Yeah, and I think if you focus on those shared goals, like we're serving customers, we're hitting targets, we're working together for the greater good, whatever it is, that helps bring those together.
Yeah.
And someone once told me too, like if you sit down with somebody that you know, maybe has a totally different communication style than you, why don't you first talk about myths and realities and generations? Because maybe that's what's happening? Like, well, you're 52. All you do is check email and all you only want to do email. Well, let's talk that through because maybe I'm not going to text you at this point or that point.
Yeah.
Or I'm late for a meeting and whatever that is, maybe just having that fun conversation.
And it can be a fun conversation. And there's like a whole lot of reasons why we're sort of product of the way that we grew up and the era that we grew up.
Yeah.
And there's learning on both sides and there's a little bit of a give and take on both sides, too.
For sure. In terms of AI day to day from your consulting practice, and you know, I'm asking this for my own knowledge too. Mm. How are you using different platforms as kind of your thought partner to make your day more efficient?
I am leaning heavily into AI for that very reason. One, it just helps me be more efficient. But two, I do a lot of like consulting on how organizations can create a better workplace to embrace AI or new technology change without adding to the stress and anxiety. And so for me, it's a learning process. And I'll tell you a quick story if we have time.
Yeah.
I was using a new AI platform to send automated LinkedIn messages. And about 200 messages went out that said, dear first name. Oh, I was horrified. I was absolutely horrified. Horrified. A few people, you know, messaged back and said, hey, you know, just to let you know. And I really appreciated the feedback because otherwise I wouldn't have known.
Right.
And I had to go back to every single email or message and say, I'm experimenting with new technology and it didn't go well. And a couple of people messaged back and said, don't worry about it. We all make mistakes. Or, you know, at least you're trying.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, that was a lesson learned. When we embrace new technology like AI, it will not go smoothly. There will be mistakes. You will embarrass yourself. People will embarrass themselves. But it's how you address that. You know, are you creating an environment where those missteps is, okay, we're learning. How do we do this better? Or are you making people afraid so they're either not disclosing a mistake or they're not willing to try something new in the first place? So how do we respond in the moment and create that learning environment, that safer environment, I think is really important with anything new, technology included.
For sure. Lifelong learning is incredibly important, especially, as you note, for stuff that's brand new to all of us. When we come back, Beth, there's kind of this growing online debate on whether or not candidates should still send thank you notes after interviews. Some say it's outdated. Others are saying, no brainer, you have to do it. I need your take on this because from an employer perspective, like if you're not sending a thank you note, like does that just – you are out of the mix. I don't know, but we're going to find out when we come back. You're listening to The Upswing. This is WTMJ. Welcome back to The Upswing. I'm Jeff Sherman, joined by Beth Ridley from the Ridley Consulting Group. Workplace trends and much, much more. New year, new you. Maybe you're out in the job market looking for a new opportunity. Seen some recent surveys that show that only about 25 to 45% of candidates send a thank you note after an interview. So less than half even take the time to thank individual or the company for the opportunity. And there's been some interesting debate that I've seen on LinkedIn and other platforms. Some people are saying, well, it's just outdated. I don't have the time. It was a Zoom interview, whatever it is. From the employer's perspective, should missing a thank you note matter in the hiring process?
I don't know if that's the one single thing that you'd put a job hiring decision on.
Okay.
However, I do think it sort of suggests a pattern.
Mm-hmm.
And it could be one data point out of several. And it really just comes down to how situationally aware is this person? How intentional are they? How thoughtful? How, you know what I mean? Like, again, those interpersonal skills mean a lot, especially if you're hiring people not just for their technical expertise, but to be positive contributors to their culture. If not that many people are sending thank you notes, what an easy way to stand out if you do send one.
And what about the platform that you should use? Is it text? Is it email? Is it handwritten? Is it old school letter with a stamp?
Yeah.
Is there a preferred platform, if you will?
Very good question. I think it probably depends on the industry and also the accessibility. So I was in a position where I wanted to send a handwritten thank you note, and I actually didn't even have the person's address. It was hard to get the address. I don't have good handwriting. I do not.
Okay.
And this person worked remotely, so would they even get it? So I opted for an email.
Okay.
I think text might feel a little too casual unless someone texted you. And then you have their text and you could reply. I feel like at a minimum, email's kind of safe. And then if you want to go the extra mile, you know, why not also do a handwritten note through snail mail? I mean, it might take a couple of days and it could even be longer before the person opens the mail. But I just think like, what a nice way to stand out. I mean, it's rare that I get a handwritten thank you note in the mail for anything, even if I hosted a dinner party. But when you do, I actually always thank the person for thanking me. You know what I mean? Because I'm that impressed. You have to find the stationery. You got to focus on your handwriting. You got to buy a stamp. You got to find a mailbox. I mean, that showed that someone was really thinking about
you. I mean, it speaks to the process and kind of the micro behaviors, if you will, that we all kind of have within us. And you're thinking, wow, they took the time to think through that process and think through the words and, and write it in a legible manner. Like, that matters.
Now, you still may not get the job, to be fair.
Right,
but whatever. I think it's about how do you want to show up in the world for other people.
All right. I want to talk a little bit about kind of in-office and hybrid culture.
Mm-hmm.
I think hybrid for many companies now is kind of the default.
Yeah.
But the shift is towards, and I'm seeing a lot of this now, a more structured hybrid model. Clear expectations of when and why people are in office versus remote.
Yep.
What is flexibility 2.0 mean?
I think when we think of flexibility, for most people, it's maybe less the physical location. It's more a little bit more control over how they work and what's important for work to actually get done. So whether you work from home or work in the office, you know, different people might need quiet time or collaboration time, or they have more energy at certain times during the day. So everybody has sort of like a different working rhythm. And so I think, again, that open conversation around what are the expectations. My working rhythm is, frankly, I probably do my best thoughtful work super late at night. Does that mean that I'm going to fire off a bunch of emails at 2 a.m. in the morning? That might be setting a different tone for different people, but it's worth a conversation. I work best at 2 a.m. That doesn't mean that I expect other people to.
When you were in a more corporate environment, was it different?
No. That was it.
That was it?
Yeah.
So you learned that in a...
Yeah, I mean, that's just where I feel like, okay, the day is done. I'm in more of a reflective mode. I'm a night owl anyway.
Okay.
But my team did have to tell me because they felt like, oh my God, she's working till 2 a.m. Holy smokes, do I have to respond to the email? And I'm causing stress and anxiety. And it was only when I sort of opened up the conversation, like, okay, our expectation is that, you know, you are responding to emails maybe within 24 hours. You know, when we do come in, it's because we want to collaborate. So we do expect you to come in.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, if you want to work weekends, that's fine so that you can have a little bit more flexibility during the work week. But, you know, there's no expectation. Every team is different.
Yeah.
Expectations are different, the work pattern, but it has to be a conversation. And I think you'll never get to perfect, but you'll get to much better.
Yeah. All right. So if you are a couple closing questions here, what is your 2026 playbook for managers look like? I guess, actually, what is the one thing it absolutely has to include?
Just one thing?
Good Lord, have mercy. Yes. You do have these amazing Beyond the Grind cards that have inspiration for each day.
I was going to say something like that. I was going to say whatever you need to feel inspired to show up and, you know, to face the grind or whatever.
Yeah.
Because if you can tap into that inspiration for yourself, it is going to more naturally radiate outward. Whatever that is, it could be a thank you note that you got from someone that's really meaningful to you. It could be maybe an accolade or a reminder from a customer of how your work matters. It could be a funny moment. It could be an inspiring quote. It could be a song that really gets you, you know, energized. So I guess your playbook should first and foremost be anything that helps you rise to your better self, even when times are hard, because that's the only way that you can sort of exude that for others.
That's great. I love it. Now, let's take that next level. And this is a question I'm going to ask all guests on the Upswing in 2026. What is your workplace-centric platform that you'd like to see talked about on the campaign trail for Wisconsin governor? Now, let's say, you know, put your political hat on a little bit. Is there something in workplace culture or something maybe like, wow, I would love to see this being talked about a little bit more through a political lens?
The lost art of discussing differences with respect. The lost art of it. We don't teach that anywhere, and we don't have any good examples.
Yeah.
So how are we supposed to know what it looks like to be able to have a conversation with someone and be respectful, even when you disagree?
I like that.
I'm going to say that.
Let's get that on the platform as the candidates are going around the state and talking about things that we all care about. Beth, I really appreciate your time. All the best this new year. And
thank
let's you. Do this again soon.
Oh, absolutely. For sure. Thank you for having me.
Welcome back to the Upswing. I'm Jeff Sherman. Samson, the famous gorilla at the Milwaukee County Zoo. You got to go back years. Samson died on November 27th, 1981, but is still part of the folklore, the tradition, and the respect that we have for our county zoo. The 46th annual Samson Stomp returns to the Milwaukee County Zoo on Sunday, January 18th. It's a running 5K tradition. Runners and walkers of all ages are invited to attend. I've done this event many times. It's amazing. It honors Samson, but it honors everything that the zoo is all about, right? There's a 5K competitive run, starts at 9:30. There's a 2-mile fun run, and then there's just the 1-mile romp for kids that starts at 10:45. Online registration is open now. Get to the Samson Stomp. It's a wonderful, great event, especially if it's really cold. Like, it's just super fun to run through the zoo and remember Samson and all he stood for. Finally, I want to wrap up our workplace conversation as I reflect on all the tidbits that Beth Ridley told us. I wonder, passion and careers. Jaslyn, you are a wonderfully passionate person. I love you for that. Do you feel like you're following your passion in your day-to-day work?
I would say that. I always love coming to work. It doesn't even feel like work half the time. And, you know, if I didn't take the risk to move to Wisconsin, I don't think I would have followed my passion. I probably wouldn't be quite as happy as I am right now.
Well, I'm glad you're here. That's a great, great answer. So I heard Michael Jordan, it was about a month ago, in an interview with NBC's Mike Tirico before a Bucks game. Michael Jordan said he had this love of the game clause in his contract that basically if he saw a basketball game on the side of the road, he could play in that basketball game. And he said, if I get hurt, my contract was still guaranteed. And it made me think, and again, based on our conversation with Beth Ridley, is passion what we're supposed to do in our careers? There's a lot of buzz right now. People saying through TED Talks or through their various social media accounts that following your passion isn't what you should do in your career. It's hard to monetize. It doesn't translate to a long career that is best for you. Right now, it's trendy to say, don't follow your passion. A lot of people are saying it. I don't buy it, right? The reality is we get 60, 70, 80, maybe 90 years on this earth. We also carry this deep enthusiasm with us. I've always been rooted in the meaning of the word, right? Enthusiasm is that God within. To me, it means there's something inside of us urging us every day to not be safe, to not be comfortable, to to live out the best qualities that we've been given. And if we ignore that, we're going to be fine, right? We're going to be fine. You're going to get through life okay. But we don't tap into the full power of what we've been given to shape the world and to make it better. So I think you should follow your passion. I say yes, we need to reframe that maybe a little bit, especially in 2026, what it would look like from a community and career lens. Do what you love, but understand that you may not be able to do it right away. You need a process. You need the people. You need the tactics. You need the mentors. You need a lot of trial and error. And you're probably going to fail more than once, more than twice, more than three times. Sometimes following your passion means you're working for good, but not perfect, right? And maybe you're going to work in that job for several years. That's not going to be the ideal job. But in that season, you are building skills. You are making connections. You're gaining experiences that are quietly going to move you towards your calling. And in that in-between time, it's not just a detour, right? It's part of that path. It's going to get you to follow your passion. Just be yourself. Don't quit your job right now and say, oh, Jeff in the upswing told me to quit my job and follow my passion. No, it's about honoring your passion while accepting that you may not be able to live it out exactly the way you want to, exactly when you want to. And you got to be okay with that. You got to be at peace with that, because that's what careers look like today. Do what you love, but know that you may not be able to do it right away. That's what I say. Follow your passion, but follow it with patience, follow it with strategy, follow it with humility, and follow it with faith. 2026, workplace and community are here. Next week on The Upswing, we're going to talk about farming, indoor farming, out of Green Bay, and how it's going nationwide.